This is your Polycast for Thursday, October 17th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, more deaths linked to vaping and a tough harvest for many farmers. Minnesota health officials say two more people in the state have died due to illnesses linked to vaping. That brings the total to three, with more than 100 other confirmed or suspected cases under scrutiny. Two top officials from the health department offered unprecedented details yesterday and warnings about the practice. Tim Nelson has more.
The death toll due to vaping is likely to keep growing. Minnesota Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm announced the confirmation of two additional deaths linked to vaping, including one confirmed user of THC, the active ingredient in marijuana. Both people died in September. She also said healthcare providers report new suspected cases of lung injury due to vaping on a daily basis.
We're deeply saddened by the news of these deaths and very, very concerned that so many Minnesotans continue to suffer severe injuries in this outbreak.
Those injuries have been linked to the deaths of at least 28 people in the U.S. so far. In Minnesota, health officials say all three who died recently were over 50 years old. Cases of lung injury have been reported in people as young as 15 and some over 65. They say the average age of more than 70 confirmed cases is 26, but that health officials should be prepared to encounter injuries in patients of any age. Though many of the cases in Minnesota include people who report using e-cigarettes to inhale THC, it's also possible regular nicotine vaping products may be involved. Health officials say they're finding it hard to even identify the products people are using, let alone what might be causing the illnesses. Ruth Linfield is the state epidemiologist.
Some of our cases have used 75 different products. And to try to figure out, you know, maybe amongst those 75, a smaller number were the ones that caused the injury, it's a challenge to put all that data together.
Linfield cautioned that users should avoid buying any vaping materials on the street and should not be adding any substances to vaping cartridges or e-cigarettes themselves. Even without acute lung injuries, e-cigarette use concerns Linfield. She says concentrated nicotine encourages addiction and can be particularly harmful to young people. And she says the risks of inhaling heated compounds are simply unknown.
In general, we know that the vape contains heavy metals, that contains carcinogens, that contains volatile organic compounds, that contains microparticles that can lodge in the lung and cause inflammation.
Governor Tim Walz said in a statement that he was alarmed by the deaths and had directed state officials to focus in particular on preventing vaping in schools and among young people. Walz said he will consider signing legislation to raise the age to purchase tobacco products to 21 statewide. He also favors banning internet sales of tobacco and vaping products, outlawing the sale of all flavored nicotine in tobacco products, and allowing health officials to declare vaping-related illnesses a public health emergency. Tim Nelson, NPR News.
Governor Tim Walz says he will spend the next 2 months inspecting proposed public works projects throughout the state. Tim Pugmire reports.
Walz said he will use information from the tour to craft a bonding bill proposal that's due in January. Last session, Walz proposed nearly $1.3 billion in borrowing, but lawmakers failed to pass a large bonding bill. He said he expects to recommend a bill at least that big next year. Walz said it will be helpful to get a firsthand look at the proposed projects.
These will span the gamut of public infrastructure and asset preservation that Minnesotans need to tackle now.
Walz said the bonding requests from state agencies and local governments have already topped $5 billion. House and Senate committees have spent several weeks conducting similar bonding tours. Tim Pugmire, NPR News.
A second Democrat has announced a challenge to Republican Congressman Tom Emmer in Minnesota's 6th Congressional District. Mark Zadeklik reports.
Tanya Zaradka is a former Miss Minnesota and television host who lives in Forest Lake. She's never before sought elective office. She criticizes Emmer for failing to advance gun control legislation, among other things. She says she's confident she can attract support from Democrats and Republicans.
I know this district is terribly tough to win. I'm not an idiot. I mean, I know that. But I also truly believe that if the people that I've been talking to have had enough of just parting, you know, voting party lines and being so tribal.
Ian Todd, who unsuccessfully ran against Immer in 2018, also hopes to run against him in next year's election. Immer's campaign had no immediate response to Zaradka's decision to get into the race. Mark Sedeklik, NPR News.
Wet conditions are making for a very challenging harvest this fall for farmers across the region. Dan Gunderson has been checking in throughout this growing season with Betsy Jensen. She's a farmer and a farm management instructor in northern Minnesota. Dan met up with her last week as she waited out yet another soggy day on her farm just outside the town of Stephen.
Betsy Jensen says the fall weather is testing her usual optimistic outlook.
There's just been drizzle and everything else for so long. It's horrible.
Low-hanging gray clouds threaten more rain as we sit down in the farm office to talk about a fall she'd like to forget. Canola and wheat have been harvested, but muddy fields have prevented the soybean harvest and delayed the harvest of sugar beets. Sugar beets are the focus right now. The Jensens need to get them out of the ground before it freezes. If they can't get to the soybeans before then, they can be harvested after the freeze.
The soybeans are probably going to be okay. I mean, not ideal. They're probably a little wet. They're not going to dry down. But it can be done if we have to. We just won't ever brag about this year to our grandkids, that's for sure.
Soybean prices have gotten higher in the past month on word China will buy more beans. China is the key market for soybeans grown here. The Jensen's corn is also still standing, but the only harvesting there is being done by a black bear who's been spending the fall in one of the Jensen's fields. But corn can be harvested after the ground freezes and will stay standing through the winter to be harvested next spring. That's the optimistic outlook. But Jensen says the weather keeps cracking her optimist shell. It's been soggy since the end of August, and she worries the soybeans might not get harvested at all if winter snow covers the crop before it can be harvested.
Then you collect crop insurance, and that is when the tears start to flow.
Crop insurance covers about 70% of costs. Jensen opens her laptop and looks up what it costs her to grow an acre of soybeans. It's about $325 per acre.
So if you thought you were going to have, for example, $350 of revenue, now you're getting, oh, is that right? Oh, geez, I don't want to do that math again. Yeah, it is. Now you're getting $245 of revenue. If you're collecting crop insurance, you're guaranteeing yourself a loss.
So in this example, not harvesting soybeans and having to tap crop insurance would mean a loss of $80 per acre. There's a little more help available. The Jensens are also eligible for a federal payment that's meant to offset the effects of ongoing trade disputes. In Marshall County, where they farm, that payment is $43 per acre, and they've received half of that payment. Still, if the crops are left in the field, Jensen says her farm and many others will need to refinance the loan they used to plant this year's crop. She says refinancing 1 year's debt, spreading it out over 5 years, sets farm finances back by 5 years.
Yeah, we might have to refinance, but I'm not going to worry about that right now. It's going to be fine. We're going to get the beans harvested, the corn harvested, the sugar beets. It's going to go great. Trying to be optimistic here. Help me out.
Farmers accept risk every time they plant a crop. But Jensen says in years like this one, the risk can be suffocating.
The stress is unbearable at times.
What does that mean?
You know, not sleeping, maybe nauseous to the stomach. I mean, that you get that pit in your stomach sometimes that you think, are we going to be able to do this? So every once in a while, you kind of got to step back and think, is the value of your life solely dependent on what happens with this crop? And it's not. I mean, there's so much more to it than that, but sometimes you got to take a step back and think about that.
In addition to managing the finances for this operation, which she runs with her husband, Brian, Jensen teaches farm management at Northland Community and Technical College in East Grand Forks. She works with about 4 dozen farmers. Some are doing well financially. Others are struggling to keep the farm. This year, she worries about them, too.
And so I have been trying to check in with some of my farmers that I worry about. You do absorb some of their stress too. It's what happens. Their stress does become your stress. I know it shouldn't. We should be able to separate ourselves, but that's not how it works.
That stress will grow or ease depending on the weather over the next few weeks. Betsy Jensen is just hoping for a few warm, dry days, but there's more rain in the forecast. Dan Gunderson, NPR News, Stephen.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.